Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Teams flooded Columbus yesterday, man, looking at all the talent they have over there. And to fill us in on what happened, we're going to talk to Bill Rabinowitz from the Columbus Dispatch. Bill, what's up, man?
How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Man, thanks for joining us. We're well. It was crowded over there in Columbus, huh? Lots of bodies over there for that pro day?
Yeah, every NFL team, the Panthers sent 14 people, including the owner and his wife. obviously, we've seen C.J. Stroud, a lot of interest in Jackson Jigba, and you know, there were I think 14 players for Ohio State that participated. I think that's the number. And they're going to be other first round picks. Paris Johnson's going to be a first round pick. There's a chance DeJuan Jones will be. Zach Harrison will go high in the draft. So yeah, Ohio State's got a bunch of players.
Bill, I mean, looking at the just amount of talent that Ohio State produces, let's look at some guys that maybe the Seahawks have interest in. I don't think C.J. Stroud is going to fall to them at number five, but how about Jackson Smith and Jigba? He's been, I feel like he's kind of been overlooked at times at Ohio State just because of the amount of NFL talent at the wide receiver position they produce. Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. next year. Do you think Jackson Smith and Jigba can become a number one receiver at the NFL level?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not sure he's the classic number one receiver in the sense that he's a 4.3 guy and big. I mean, he's not that big, and he ran a 4.48. That was kind of the unofficial time yesterday, which is fast, but not like crazy fast. What makes him special is his quickness, his hands, his quickness, his ability to just cut on a dime, get in and out of breaks just so quickly without losing any speed. Is he a classic number one receiver? You know, I don't know. I mean, but I'll tell you that when Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave were here, they said Jackson was the best of the three. And so that tells you something. And then if you saw him play in the Rose Bowl against Utah at the end of 2022 or 2021, that was a record-setting performance. And he would have had an incredible year last year. And I'm sure a lot of people here think that if he'd been healthy, Ohio State would have won the national championship. But, you know, they lost to Georgia in a game that came down to a 50-yard field goal. They didn't have Marvin Harrison in the fourth quarter, and obviously they didn't have Jackson Smith and Jigba at all. And so if those guys had been able to play together, which they only did one time in that Rose Bowl game, it was pretty spectacular.
Bill, I look at Jigba, and I think of Cooper Kupp. Cooper ran a 4.6, and he is now one of the best receivers in the league. If you really break down the receiver position, there's so many things you can do to get open. He understands leverage. He has great hands. He can feel the soft spot in the zones. When these scouts are looking at Njigba, if he were not to run that 4.48 and say he were to run a 4.6, would it change the perception of him, or would they rely on examples like Cooper Kupp and say, okay, man, this guy can play some football?
Yeah, I think the Cooper Kupp comparison is pretty good. I mean, I really do. I mean, but I think he's faster. I mean, I think he is fast. I mean, let's not say that just because he didn't run a 4.3, he's not fast.
Right.
And there's football speed and there's track speed, right? I mean,
yes.
40 time. It's kind of funny. It's kind of comical that these guys spend months preparing for the 40 when in the actual game of football, they'll never actually do that. You never run 40 yards in a straight line. So, I mean, I've done this for a long time, and some of the stuff that they do at the combine is just kind of absurd. Or the emphasis that people put on certain drills is, I mean, what matters much more is put on the tape. What do you see? Watch the games. You know, is he a football player? And, you know, some guys are combine guys and some guys are football players. And look, what Jackson did at the combine in terms of the three-cone drill, which does, you know, those kind of drills, I think, matter because it measures quickness and, you know, an ability to get in and out of breaks and that kind of thing. And he just dazzled in those, which was no surprise. So, you know, any team that gets Jackson will be happy to get Jackson. I can assure you that.
Bill, C.J. Stroud was often scrutinized by Buckeyes fans during his career at Ohio State. Was that sort of kind of out of pocket by Buckeyes fans, or was there something to their concerns with him, you know, as starting quarterback?
Well, let's just say the Buckeye Nation is so big that the lunatic fringe is big. So, you know, look, I think Ohio State fans, most Ohio State fans, the overwhelming majority of Ohio State fans appreciated how good C.J. Stroud was. But, you know, he was not a runner. And they're coming off having Justin Fields, who was obviously an elite runner. And you had Braxton Miller before him and J.T. Barrett, who were just, you know, they were willing runners. Yeah, they wanted to be pocket-first quarterbacks, but when the time came to run, they ran. Well, C.J. did not really want to run. He would buy time in the pocket and kind of wait for his receivers to get open. And when you've got receivers like he's had, why not, right? I mean, he could do much more damage getting the ball to those guys than he can running. But there were times when he could have run for a first down and didn't. And then sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And he even said at the combine, yeah, I mean, I do regret that I didn't run more. And he can run. He's an okay runner. He's, you know, he's certainly adequate. But not Justin Fields, obviously, because there are very few of those. But he, you know, he can do it, and I think that's why the Georgia game was so important for him, because he did run and ran effectively when he needed to. And when he stayed in the pocket, he just, you know, diced up a very, very good Georgia defense. I mean, Ohio State was the only team in the country, really, that consistently move the ball against Georgia. I mean, I know LSU put up some points in the SEC championship game after the game got out of hand, and Georgia was probably playing soft. But Georgia could not stop Ohio State when Ohio State had everybody. It changed when Harrison got hurt. But, you know, C.J. Stroud is a special, special passer. And in the NFL, yeah, it's great to have a quarterback who can run. It's more important to have a quarterback who can throw accurately and can buy time for himself in the pocket or out of a pocket, and C.J. Stroud could do that.
I agree 100%, Bill. I watched that game against Georgia, and I go, there it is. That's the thing that we wanted to see or needed to see. Can you extend plays? Can you use your legs? So when you have pro days and you have everybody in the league there and they're looking at C.J., what are they looking for? I mean, is it more just how he conducts himself as a personality? Because we all know what he can do according to film in that Georgia game.
Yeah, that's a good question. And unfortunately, we don't really get a chance to talk to the NFL guys. We're kind of stuck in a corner, and the NFL guys have the run of the place. And by the time we get to talk to the players, we have to talk to the players. You know, that's our priority. So I didn't get a chance to talk to NFL guys about C.J. Stroud. But, I think pro days are fun for the players. I think they're somewhat useful. But anyone who kind of judges a player off a pro day, I mean, look, you ought to look good on a pro day. You're not going to get sacked. You have no defenders. You know, you're just throwing against air. You ought to look good. And he did. He looked spectacular. But but you didn't go into yesterday thinking, geez, I hope C.J. Stroud can make all the throws. You knew he could. You've seen it. So, you know, I think the combine and things like pro days and the meetings that come with it, it's much more important, you know, the interview process in terms of players meeting with the teams and them sounding each other out, you know, getting that kind of developing that kind of relationship and answering questions is probably much more important than being able to throw a 50-yard bomb.
Bill Rabinowitz of the Columbus Dispatch joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. And Bill, did you notice any NFL coaches or front office members at the pro day paying a little bit closer attention than any others? I know Pete Carroll is a guy that has a real hard time hiding his emotions when he sees a great prospect. Did you notice any front offices kind of licking their chops on anybody?
Oh, again, because we were tucked in the corner so far away. No, I mean, you know, I've actually meant to bring my binoculars in. I don't know what boy, I don't know what happened to them, but I thought I packed them and I didn't. So, you know, not that I would have studied Pete Carroll or any other NFL person there to see what they were thinking or react, how they were reacting. But, yeah, I did actually want to be able to see that and I couldn't. But no, first of all, they're not going to like jump up and down anyway. They're going to hold their cards close to the vest because they don't want to tip their hand either. But look, you couldn't be at that thing yesterday and not go, yeah, he can throw. If there was any doubt, he could throw.
Hey, Bill, we saw Marvin Harrison Jr. get some work in yesterday, trying to, you know, show everybody this is what is to come. Have you ever seen a situation where an underclassman goes out there and does his thing in front of these scouts?
Yeah, they've done that before. Ohio State's done that because they want to prepare these guys for what it's going to be next year. Kyle McCord was throwing passes yesterday. He's in a quarterback battle with Devin Brown to succeed DJ Stroud. He was out there throwing. Jaden Ballard was out there, another receiver. First of all, they need guys to catch the balls, and Ohio State really doesn't have any other than Jackson. They didn't really have anybody else like Xavier Johnson, who's going to be a 6-year player. He caught some balls. Kate Stover, the tight end, caught some balls. So, yeah, but I tell you what, and I tweeted this yesterday, if Marvin Harrison Jr. were eligible for the draft, he'd be a top 5 pick. Yeah. I mean, he's that good. You could make a case for number one.
Wow.
He's a spectacular player.
Just a wealth of talent over there in Columbus. Bill, the Seahawks kind of in the market for a center, at least a young center. Luke Whipler worked out yesterday. What do Seahawks fans or just NFL fans need to know about him as a center? What does he bring to the table?
He plays with an edge. I mean, he's a feisty guy. He's a New Jersey guy, It's kind of a stereotype. And we want to shy away from stereotypes too much. But he embraces that, He's He'll there's some rough edges with him in a good way. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's a very smart guy. But he plays with an edge. And so, he might not have all the measurables. He's a little bit small for a center. He's a good athlete, maybe not an elite athlete. But he's not going to back down to anyone. He's going to be a leader. He's feisty. I really enjoyed, covering him and talking to him because he's, he's got personality. I mean, he did some stand-up comedy. There was one year in the high school when he got hurt and he couldn't play football. And he a couple times went to a comedy club and did stand-up comedy. He's done bungee cord jumping with his brother in New Zealand. And I did this story on him and he said, I want to live life to the fullest. I want to experience everything and just have no regrets. And that kind of comes through. I mean, he's a fiery guy. He's an interesting guy.
Hey, Bill, the Washington faithful wouldn't let me live if I didn't ask you about two guys you got over there. You got a Mecca at the receiver spot who went to Steilacoom High School here, and you got JT who went to Eastside Catholic over here.
Yep.
How are those guys looking? We saw a game last year where JT looked like a grown man, and now we've seen a Mecca tear the whole country up when it comes to receiving, man. The future looks bright for our two Washington kids, huh?
No question. JT Tuimoloau took everybody, including me, like a year to figure out how to pronounce his name. Like crazy, but I've got it now, Tuimoloau. The game against Penn State last year was as dominating a performance by a defensive player as I've ever seen, including the NFL, which I covered for 12 years, and then I think 12 years at Ohio State. I mean, he was a one-man wrecking crew. It was just amazing. And you say, well, why couldn't he do that every game? Well, nobody does that every game. It just doesn't happen. I mean, I can't even remember all the stats. It was like two interceptions, one to pick six, fumbles, sacks. It was just like everything. It was a defensive end's dream. And he's a really, really good player. He just is. And I expect him to take another jump this year and be certainly a first-round pick next year. I'd be surprised I chatted with him a little bit yesterday, and I said, hey, this is going to be you out there next year. He said, well, if it's God's plan. And so, but I think it will be. I think he'll be out there. And Emeka is just such a solid receiver, solid guy. He's so grown up. I mean, you talk to him, and you're talking to an adult. And he's a smart guy. And just a really good and selfless player. He'll block downfield. He's got terrific hands. He's overshadowed by Marvin Harrison because Marvin Harrison is kind of a unicorn in a way. Harrison's 6'4" and runs like a guy who's 6 foot. I mean, I've never seen anyone like Marvin Harrison in terms of body type and speed and all the other stuff. Emeka's not that big. I mean, he's bigger than you think, and he plays big. I think he has a chance to be a first-round pick next year. They've been Ohio State's been very, very happy with the Washington guys that are on their team.
Bill, last one from me. Speaking of Washington, Ohio State made the decision to cancel their home-and-home series with the Huskies. We've heard a lot of theories, at least from people based out west, as to why the Buckeyes may have backed out of this. Why do you think Ohio State said, thanks but no thanks to UW?
Well, I think it probably just came down to money, and that they want to have another home game. They don't want to have a home-and-home. This year, they only have six home games. And Ohio State's football program, like most football programs, really supports all the other programs. I mean, basketball is, generates a small profit, but nothing compared to football. And Ohio State has 36 varsity sports, as big as any in the country. And so when you have only six home games this year, and then with obviously USC and UCLA coming in, that's going to change the dynamic too. So I think, well, we're going to go to the West Coast. Probably going to go to the West Coast for one of those games. And do we want to go to, all the way to Seattle one of those years? And so I would have loved it. I mean, I've been to Seattle before. It's a great city. It's always fun to go to a different stadium and all that. But I think it really just came down to money. I don't think there was any kind of, animosity or, we don't like Washington or don't want to play Washington. I think it just came down to it makes sense for them financially. And it was like $500,000 is the fee that they've got to pay, which, it'd be nice to get $500,000 for nothing, right? But I think, I understand the disappointment. I mean, it would have been a nice series. But I think that Ohio State just kind of decided for financial reasons we need to do this.
All right. He is Bill Rabinowitz from the Columbus Dispatch on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. We appreciate your insight and your time, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
No problem. Celebrate the Mariners opening day by joining us at our live broadcast outside the left field gates at T-Mobile Park. We'll be live starting with the Bump and Stacey show from 10 to 2. You know how we do. And then Wyman and Bob will take you all the way up to the pregame show at 6 p.m. This hour, the Bump and Stacey show is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get the four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
Bump, first down to you, Juju Smith-Schuster, my guy, and his jersey number reminded you that the NFL is a business. How so?
This is a business. It's a business because, did you know, if Juju wanted to switch jerseys or numbers with, I forgot who the DN over there, D lineman who has his,
oh, is that Matthew
his number
Judon?
Nine. Yeah, Judon.
Yeah.
If he wanted to do that, Judon would have to buy all of the jerseys with his number on it that are on the market. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, Juju's like, no, because he's going to ask me to pay for that because I want that number. I'm good. So I'm assuming he's going to go back to number 19, which is what he wore with the Pittsburgh Steelers. That number is open. But I saw this and I go, dang, the NFL can't eat $200K, $300K. A $1 billion corporation cannot eat that money. It is a business. And that reminded me of that.
Second down. What's a rumor that you heard that would make everyone in the NFL upset?
Who's the best quarterback in this league?
Patrick Mahomes.
Pat Mahomes by far. Rumors are circulating that the Chiefs are interested in Odell Beckham and DeAndre Hopkins. Could you imagine both of them? Now, I think they can only afford one, but, they're kicking the tires on both of these guys. Could you imagine Pat Mahomes with DeAndre Hopkins or Odell Beckham? He made Juju look nice last year.
If they get DeAndre Hopkins, that's going to be like when Tom Brady had Randy Moss to throw to.
Yes, exactly.
Cheat code.
I look at that, and I picture DeAndre Hopkins in that orange and red and white. I see Pat Mahomes scrambling to the right side. We already have the Hail Mary by Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. That'll just be a regular occurrence if D-Hop is over there with the Chiefs. That is a scary thought. Andy Reid would draw up some things for D-Hopkins. I hope it doesn't happen. I'd rather have Odell Beckham over there. But even if he were to go over there, another weapon, man. Stop letting the rich get richer.
Third down. Bob, how do the teams that lost in the NFC and AFC Conference Championship games make it all the way to the Super Bowl next year?
I was thinking about this. I go, look, but you got two teams that were close. Close but no cigar, didn't really make it. Let's start with the Cincinnati Bengals. These guys need to protect their quarterback, right? He's one of the most sacked quarterbacks over the past 2 years. So what do? They go and get Orlando Brown and say, look, we're going to invest in this offensive line, all right? And now you got to keep your weapons as long as possible. We got Chase. You got some time until he's re-up 2026. You got Joe Mixon, who's making about $13 million hitting the cap right now. Are you going to keep him? What do you do with that situation? And then you have Higgins, who will be a free agent in 2024. So what you have to do is you have to protect your quarterback and extend these men if you feel like they're ready to go. Now, when we look at the Niners, all right, the Niners, they need to continue to build on this defense. That's exactly what they did. They got Hargrave, right? Enough said. That D-line is going to look good. And now their weapons just have to stay healthy. Purdy has an injury. McCaffrey, we know, will get banged up at times. And then Debo has missed games in 3 out of 4 years. If Debo can stay healthy, Purdy can stay healthy. McCaffrey, and they keep adding to that D-line, that's how they're going to do it. I look at these two teams and say, they're not too far off from making a run at that Super Bowl.
Fourth down. All right, which wide receiver in this year's draft class needs a bit more love?
There was one receiver. He had 6 receptions and 5 touchdowns for 206 against Bama. The best defense in all the land. Not Georgia, best defense in all the land. Bama, a good program. And that guy is Jalin Hyatt. Now, here's the thing about him. He's not a guy like Njigba who's going to route you up, who has a great feel for the game. But if he's in the right scheme, if he is in the right scheme where he can catch that ball across the middle and let his jets go, because he's deceptively fast. You look at his gait and his stride. You look at him, you go, oh, he's not really moving. Then he sneaks up on you. If you watch that game against Alabama, those safeties are like deers caught in the headlight. Because once he gets 5 yards from you, if you haven't turned those hips and run, he is going to run by you. I look at Jalin Hyatt and I go, why isn't anybody talking about this guy? 6 receptions, 5 touchdowns, 206 versus Bama? And they're not talking about him.
That's Tennessee who beat Bama.
Yeah.
Hendon Hooker on the throwing end of those touchdowns.
I'm saying, my guy needs a bit more love. Let's show Jalin Hyatt some love. He got her done. All right, that was four down territory. All right, Devin McCourty spilling some beans about the Patriot way. We got JPC and UFOs. And are the Panthers sending subliminals? We'll talk about that all next here on The Bump and Stacey Show. Dad Edition, me and Curtis Rogers.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Curtis Rogers filling in for Stacey Ross today. I'm Michael Bumpus, and this is The Timeline. The stuff that's blowing up your Twitter feed or whatever you do. Here's the first story. Devin McCourty, he shared a story about how Bill Belichick's son Steve was in over his head when he came into coaching. This is cut number 4.
The one thing that I've loved about Steve is honesty.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Steve takes over. I forgot who left. I think Pat Graham left. Flo's moving to linebacker coach. And Steve said Bill tells him 2 weeks before the offseason program starts that he's going to be the safety coach. Mm-hmm. So he comes in there. Now he's walking in the room. It's me, Pat Chung, Daron Harmon, Nate Ebner. So he's walking in, and we got all these veterans. I'm older than Steve. Pat's older than Steve. He played with Daron, and he's probably like the same age as Nate.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks in there, and he goes, yo, I'm be honest with y'all. I don't know what the F I'm doing right now. My dad told me 2 weeks ago that I was even going to have this job. And now I'm just sitting here like, I don't know what what's next?
Yeah.
And that first year, we all just worked together.
Now, I appreciate the honesty, especially when you're dealing with a position group that is full of veterans. You go in there, because if you go in there and you act like you know what you're doing, you get up on that whiteboard, you're coaching them up, they're going to sniff it out. Rookies will sniff it out that you don't know what you're doing. But what he did do is he revealed exactly how the NFL works.
Yeah, it's who you know, not what you know.
Yeah.
And Steve Belichick has a great last name in NFL circles. If your last name is Belichick, doors will open for you.
Yes.
Imagine being a safeties coach or somebody that wants to be a safeties coach one day. You've spent a decade plus grinding tape, working crazy hours, and all of a sudden you see the head coach's son get the job that you were trying to get. And come to find out from Devin McCourty that this guy had no idea what he was doing when he first became the Patriots safety coach. And I think he's since been promoted within the organization, too, at times. I do wonder if Steve Belichick may end up becoming the Patriots head coach one day after Bill retires. I mean, there's that possibility, too. I mean, there's also other guys like Joe Judge and Matt Patricia in that organization. I don't know if it was the best thing for Steve Belichick to do to say, I don't know what I'm doing here. like you mentioned, though, it was great, though, that the safeties group that the Patriots had at the time was chock full of veterans. McCourty played more than a decade in the league. I think Pat Chun also played more than a decade in the NFL, too. So, I mean, he landed in a spot where he probably didn't need to be Mr. X's and O's, but... boy, that's maybe not the best look.
Yeah, the personnel probably allowed Bill to be comfortable with him saying, okay, you go and learn. Now, doesn't mean he doesn't know football. I'm sure he knows football, but the little intricacies of playing safety is what he was lacking. All right, on last night's Root Sports broadcast, J.P. Crawford claimed to have had multiple alien encounters. Cut five.
J.P., have you ever seen an alien?
Honestly, I have. I'm not even gonna lie. I have witnesses too. You call my best friends. You could call my wife. I've had two encounters. One of them was in Mercer Island 1 year.
And that's fantastic.
I promise. So yeah, it just makes me believe even more.
Can you? I believe you, JP. Can you describe what this encounter was like?
Yeah, so we're outside on our balcony making dinner one night. Out of the horizon, there's this little thing of light. And then a minute later, it's already over our heads. And it's this disc. It's not blinking, nothing. It's higher than a plane. And then my wife, I'm like, hey, go get your camera out. Record this. You know, this is crazy.
And did you?
And then we tried to take pictures or a video on the good camera, and it wouldn't focus on it. That's just how you know. It was an alien ship. And then I followed this crazy page on Instagram, and the next day they said we were visited by an alien ship. And it looked just like the one I seen. So, yeah, firm believer. Right, her.
All right, so listen, this is my two cents, okay? I've mentioned this before. I know people that know people that work on things that go into outer space. And they've told me, Curtis Rogers, that there is activity. So I listen to JP, and some people might think he's crazy. Some people might think I am crazy, but I don't doubt it. I've just never seen it myself.
Yeah, I've never, ever had an encounter with the third kind. I've never had any sort of alien encounter in my life.
That you know of.
That's true. Maybe, that's what they want
Brady
me to
Bones,
think.
Brady Bones could be in an alien
I
right
don't know.
Now.
I don't think he is.
Never know.
He seems very real to me.
25-year-old in radio? Can't be.
But JP seems very adamant that he has seen other life. I'm not going to question him. I just find it hard to believe since I've never done it, you know?
I feel it.
Yeah.
You know?
Look, the universe is so expansive.
Huge.
There's probably got to be some life.
Has to be something out there, right?
Like, it just can't be a giant vastness of nothing.
And it's just us.
It's just us? It's kind of lonely.
Oh, it is kind of lonely.
Oh, there's like 8 billion people on Earth, but still.
Panthers coach Josh McCown tells C.J. Stroud, he goes, hey, maybe when you live in Charlotte, we'll find a court. They were talking about playing horse, and this happened at the conclusion of the Ohio State's pro day. I felt like he tried to whisper it a little bit, but when you send 12 representatives to a pro day, when you are dapping up the quarterback of a program, a potential number one pick, and then you whisper that little sweet nothing into his ear, it's got to make you think that the Panthers just might switch things up and go with CJ. And it would make sense to me because we just spoke to Bill Rabinowitz, and he mentions just, look, this guy is NFL ready. He makes every single throw. He's mobile enough. I look at this, the body work that CJ has put together and his size alone, and I go, that's a Carolina Panthers quarterback.
Yeah, and that's a team that's a quarterback away from, I think, being in control of that NFC South division. You don't send 13 members of your organization. As Bill pointed out, they sent the wife of the owner to the pro day to meet CJ Stroud and to, you know, get acquainted with him prior to, I'm guessing, Carolina's selection of him at number one overall. CJ Stroud not falling to number five. I appreciate the Seahawks doing their due diligence and meeting with him and taking that selfie with him and, you know, rubbing elbows the way they did. That guy's not going to be there at number five because Carolina, I think, has moved all their chips in on this guy. Yeah, Bryce Young is going to meet with the Panthers, right? I think today. We got word from Albert Breer just moments ago that the Seahawks will also meet with Bryce Young, and tomorrow they're going to be in Lexington, Kentucky for Kentucky's Pro Day, likely meeting with Will Levis too. I think they're just going to hit all the top quarterbacks at some point. Florida, I don't think, has had their Pro Day yet. But
next Thursday.
Yeah, we'll see them probably meet with Anthony Richardson. But I think Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, while it's great to dream about that possibility, I don't think it's realistic because of conversations like he had with Josh McCown yesterday where it's like, hey, when you're in Charlotte, not if you're in Charlotte, yeah. When you're in Charlotte, come holler.
You bring wifey when you need that that unbiased opinion. They brought wifey to the party. Next up. Julio Rodriguez is Sports Illustrated cover athlete for their MLB season preview issue. Come on now. Let's go.
He's gone national. He's gone global. Bump, is the cover of Sports Illustrated in 2023 as prestigious as it was when we were growing up?
Unfortunately, it isn't. It used to be everything.
It's still pretty cool.
It's cool as heck. It's still prestigious, but the same prestige? I don't think so, because we have the internet.
Yeah.
We have phones that are computers now. Us growing up, I used to go to the corner store and go get that Sports Illustrated and actually read it. Now I just do it online.
When was the last time you purchased a physical copy of Sports Illustrated?
Man, you know what? I'm going to have to say it was...
Because I remember the last
Kobe. When Kobe passed and he was on it. Okay. But before then, it had to be like LeBron or somebody was on it.
The last time I purchased a physical copy of Sports Illustrated was when the Seahawks won Super Bowl 48.
Mm-hmm.
Because you wanted that commemorative issue. You wanted to just go back in time to when that moment happened. And having that physical copy is really cool. I also saved, the front page of the Seattle Times, too.
Got to.
From that day. That was what, early 2014,
yeah.
February of 2014. We're in 2023. It was almost a decade ago when I last purchased a Sports Illustrated. I'm not knocking this honor for Julio. It's really cool, and I would love to be on.
You're gonna buy this
Sports
one,
Illustrated. I don't know if I will.
You probably should though.
Maybe. I think he's gonna get more covers.
Yeah, but the first one.
The first one is the most special.
Right.
It is.
All right, here we go. Hey, miss any part of the show? Make sure you subscribe to the Bump and Stacey podcast, the latest Seattle sports news available right on your phone every single weekday, available wherever you get your podcasts, man. Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Please rate and review if you do subscribe. It ain't football without the big boys up front. When we return, we're going to break down the potential of this offensive line with this new addition, Everett Brown, and the rest of the game. That's coming up next on the Bump and Stacey show. We got Curtis Rogers filling in for Stacey.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
The offensive line, the defensive line, without those guys, it's not football. It's 7-on-7, and you don't get paid to play 7-on-7. You don't get scholarships to play 7-on-7. So we're going to focus on these big boys and the potential of this offensive line, Curtis. I look at this line and I go, okay, if there's anything the Hawks have done two out of the last three drafts, is that they picked up some solid pieces. Last year, you picked up some tackles. Got Abe Lucas and Charles Cross. A couple years ago, you pick up Damian Lewis at that guard spot. And then the other spots, you've been kind of moving guys around. We've seen Ethan Posick. We've seen Kyle Fuller at times. Austin Blythe at that center spot. We've also seen Gabe Jackson at the other guard spot. He is no longer with us. But I was talking to you in the sports pit. We're getting ready for the show. And you bring up a good point that it's important to keep these guys together. Why?
Well, so they can grow together. They can get that cohesion you see from some of the best offensive lines. And then also, you've got your starting tackles on rookie deals. You could potentially have a starting center on a rookie deal if you are wanting to go that route in the draft. John Michael Schmitz of Minnesota is an option at pick number 20, I think, unless somebody takes him prior to that. We just talked to Bill Rabinowitz about Austin Whipler from the Ohio State Buckeyes. So there is potential to add at the center position, or maybe they'd go and look at the guard spot too. think about having an offensive line where, what, four out of your starting five are on their rookie deals still? Like, that is a way where you can take advantage of that extra money that's being out, that's available to you, and round out the rest of your roster. The second most important position on offense besides quarterback is left tackle. You've got Charles Cross there on his rookie deal for at least three more seasons, potentially four if you pick up his fifth year option, unless you negotiate a contract with him before then. You've got Abe Lucas for three more seasons on the offensive line on a rookie deal. You've got Damian Lewis, who I think is entering year four, so he is up near the end of his rookie deal. But then let's say you add a center. That's four more years you've bought yourself of a rookie contract. That's four more years of money that can be spent elsewhere at positions where, you know, maybe that's just not an opportunity where you normally spend because of what you're giving to your offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, beautifully said, because you're going to have to pay your tackle here pretty soon. Not pretty soon, eventually you're going to have to pay your tackle. Damian Lewis is going to re-up. You got Abe Lucas. You bring in Evan Brown. We'll see how that works out. And you could go to this draft and get you another guy. When you look at this offensive line, man, it's all about cohesion. It's all about being on the same page. It's all about feel. There's no other position in football to where you're double-teaming a guy, and once you feel his weight shift left or right, depending on what zone you're, what zone play you're running, now one releases and gets up to the second level. There is a non-spoken communication that goes on that offensive line once the ball is snapped. How do you build that chemistry? Is you get guys every single snap, the same five on the same wave, on the same wavelength. And now look at Phil Haynes. Right, they re-signed Phil Haynes. Phil Haynes has been a guy who can play all across the line. Do you think he is the answer? You think he is the guy that's going to start at one of these guard positions?
I think for this year, yes, he is going to be a starter at one of the guard positions. I think that's why they got rid of Gabe Jackson. I mean, they could have brought Jackson back, but they were like, you know what? We're getting the same level of play for a fraction of the cost out of Phil Haynes than we are out of Gabe Jackson. So it just makes sense financially for us to go that route with Haynes moving forward at one of the guard spots. Do I think Phil Haynes is the answer beyond this season at guard? I don't think so, but I think you've got to continually build out this offensive line. It's not just a one-year fix where it's going to go from what it was a couple of years ago to, you know, one of the best ever. You've still got room for Lucas and Cross to grow. You've still got room for them to become even better than what they were in their rookie seasons. So that kind of value you're getting from them can only be beneficial. And I think, I wonder if what the Seahawks did at their tackle spots is something that maybe other teams will look at in the future and be like, yo, these guys were able to get rookies at maybe the two most important spots on the offensive line, definitely the most important spot at left tackle. Now all of a sudden it kind of sets themselves up where, I mean, they've committed a lot of dollars to like their secondary, specifically the safety position. Right. Maybe it's a little easier to accept that when you're not having to pay, you know, premium dollar for these kinds of positions.
Now, Geno was one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league. I'm not going to put that all on the offensive line. I'm going to put it on Geno as well. That second half of the season, he was either forcing the football a little bit more or holding on to it, not trying to make that mistake. But not only are you going to bring back three out of the five guys in your offensive line, you're bringing back Geno. So the presence of Geno is going to help that offensive line as well, because they know his cadence, you know how to communicate. Now what's up to Evan Brown? If I'm Evan Brown and I want to be the center for the Seattle Seahawks, I'm hitting up Geno and we're going out to lunch once a week.
Every year. Right?
I just want to pick your brain. We're going to sit there. I want to hear your cadence. Like, what are you thinking? We're watching film. What are you thinking here? Let's walk through it, because that relationship is so important. But Evan Brown will be supported because you got Geno and you got guys who have been there. And then Evan Brown, I admire him because he's an undrafted free agent who has found a way to hang around in this league. And this might be his true first opportunity to start at the center position. He did play guard for the Detroit Lions last year.
Yeah, he filled in to ended up starting, I think it was at 11 games last year for Detroit. Are sacks the best measurement of offensive line success?
No.
It's one way to measure an offensive line, but there are other ways to measure it. Like how good is the run game? How, you know, did the Seahawks have one of the best running attacks in the league? I think they could potentially, if Ken Walker continues where he's going as an NFL player, I think he's going to be a feature back one day in the NFL, even more so than he was in year one. You know, how much... just offensive efficiency. Like, there are many different ways to measure the success of an offensive line outside of just sacks allowed. Now, I think that's an easy one for people to look at because it's like, well, quarterback tackled, defensive pressure coming your way. What's in between the quarterback and the defense? It's the offensive line.
Right.
Well, as you pointed out, Bump, sometimes sacks are the quarterback's fault. Holding on to the ball too long. As we found out, Russell Wilson, very much responsible for the number of sacks that he took because his sack total in Denver, while historically that offensive line has performed better than Seattle's, looked a lot like what Seattle's offensive line looked like during Russell Wilson's tenure here.
Yes, sir. But we can't agree. This offensive line, full of potential, man.
It is.
Let's see what they do in this draft because they got some pieces in place that we feel like are going to be here for a while. Okay, when we return, we're going to talk to our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. She's going to fill us in on all the good times that are happening down in Arizona. That is next on the Bump and Stacey Show.